I apologize in advance for my voice. I'm a little under the weather. So I just kind of went digging in the archives for some stuff that you may have already heard. But I'm going to start, because it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, and thank God there's no hockey game tonight. However, it has happened in the past that we have had poetry here while there's hockey going on next door. And you kind of, you want them to win, but you just cross your fingers that for the next 15 minutes or the next, you know, nobody scores a goal. And so 4 years ago, I was here reading and so wrote a poem in honor of it. It's called On the Occasion of Reading Poetry in the Back Room of Hemingway's Bar on Game 6 Night of the Stanley Cup Finals. Or In Poetry as in Hockey. In poetry as in hockey, we are playing the body, circling through white space, rushing the blue line, trying to slip some round hard truth into the net ahead of all defenses. In poetry as in hockey, we are seduced by violence, slamming into the boards, shooting, going for the kill, charged by the power of play. In poetry as in hockey, players quest for the grail, the trophy, a necrophy, so heavy, they say, until you lift it, engraved with generations of names, some remembered, most forgotten. But in poetry as in hockey, the dream of the arena begins on the cold, hard rivers of our youth, cold nights of quiet save for the rasp and the scratch of metal blade, wooden stick, laboring breath. So that got me into, I've written a lot of winter poems. I come from Minnesota, so that's probably why. Even though it's not winter, you know, why we're playing hockey in June, I don't know. But so this is called Coin-Op Landscape. The stream that winter looked like a front-loading washer, water and foam under a sheer layer of ice surging, while our faces at the window, despite the cold, hypnotically stared. How can I look at that river now, Frank said. You've desecrated the landscape. As if I had dumped a hulking Maytag onto the rocks of Gooseberry Falls. We followed the washing machine stream on its run down to Lake Superior, watched it carry away our impurities, depositing them there. All these years later, in some overlit laundromat, I think of that window, that surging. Of all the rivers we walked that winter, this is the one I remember. Okay. Oh, what the hell? This one is really old. In the Lake Superior winter, an ice road is formed to drive from island to mainland. 6 inches of ice can hold a car over water 200 feet deep. I slowly move across. The tires over snow creak. Shipwreck, shipwreck, shipwreck. The boys build an oval racetrack and in their junk cars circle and play. Performing dazzling spins and turns, they collide, slide into nothing. Some years a crack opens, swallowing the occasional truck or Cadillac. One couple from the city tried to move a house across, attached to the back of a semi. Fish now swim in its kitchen. Okay. So this is a short one. It's a procrastination poem. What she did when she should have been doing something else. The writing deadline approaches. I will be late, as usual. But look. How clean the kitchen. The laundry so neatly folded. Okay. So, sometimes procrastination isn't such a bad thing. I have some poems that have just been sitting around that I have never sent out for publication. And so that makes them still eligible for contests. So I sent this one, along with a couple others that I won't read tonight, off to and I had to learn his name, the Arkady Dragomoshenko Prize in Innovative Use of Language. And it was deemed, it was chosen runner-up by Charles Bernstein. So this doesn't really make me a language poet. It took like, you know, 10 years to collect three poems that fit the bill, but this is one of them. And it was inspired, actually, there is some language poetry I kind of like. This was inspired by Harriet Mullen, who came to read here, back in 2004 maybe. And she had just published her book, Sleeping with the Dictionary. So this is called Men of Letters. Lately, my neighbor has been sleeping with the dictionary. At night, through the walls, I hear them laughing. I try not to listen to their unholy noise, the thumping of consonants, the low moan of vowels, the scream of exploding syntax. At times, I can hardly bear it. Lying awake in the dark, I remember my own lettered youth, the potent musk of all-night etymologies, the artful seduction of homonyms, unpunctuated rendezvous, synonymous trysts, the 26 positions of the alphabet. Time unfolding in the aimless present of life as an intransitive verb. Alas, dear reader, all that is past, for I married Chicago Manual of Style. He seems so confident, so steady, so sure. Of my unreferenced past, he knew nothing. But now, how I hate him as he lies there inert, sleeping the satisfied sleep of the just. He's grown fat on footnotes, priggish and pedantic. Why must he always be right? Why must the world be so rigidly ordered? And style? What style? This manual has no style. Do you ever see him sporting a paperback? Or hanging out in front with the pocket size? Ah, dear reader, I have a confession. Today, I had lunch with Thesaurus. I was left breathless. He was dazzling, so imaginative and subtle. Most important, he made me feel singular again. I know this adventure could bring heartbreak and misery, but Chicago Manual need never know. Besides, as they say, it's only lunch, or luncheon, or spread. Snack, bite, collation from the Latin collatio. Okay. Do I look at the good cop? I'll read one more. No, I didn't I didn't even bring two more. This one was playing with language, but to a little more serious purpose. The inspiration, or there's kind of an intertext with this poem, was a poem by William Carlos Williams called The Sun, that as I read it seemed to me to be talking about modern poetry. But this was written and about the limits of language, and it was around the time, if you remember, that guy James Frey, the book A Million Little Pieces, was that the name of it? It was presented as fiction, as a memoir, but it was fiction. But there were a lot of people defending him and ideas of truthiness and stuff. It was just a moment when truthiness was in the air. And it was a long time ago, but we still seem to be at war. So this is called The Sum. The sum of our sins, a million brittle fleeces, fall through the holy silence. Truth, holier still, plenty of doom to maneuver. Faulty memory, a sea of smelly lace. Have we floated far enough beyond knowledge? Obscene refusals shard this postmodern shore, stinking to high heaven. It's the deep trough that counts, Oprah Oompahs, while the man in the fray is counting. 18 parts fiction to 448 invention yields an acceptable 5% margin. That's what he really said. Just ask poor Richard with his gappy-toothed Jakes what a lapse of 18 can net you. But this is how we glib now. Old storylines slacken. Grab a story doctor. Bring on W's, MDs. It's freedom of bone that daunts. While down, down in our unclothed dislocation, the king is in his counting house, something smelling funny. I left 18% of my 172 body parts on some margin of error near Tikrit. All of my sleep, plus a little bit of tibia. The sand is not done drying. While my memoryless countrymen lie in the sun, glistening, bent again and again to the penny dreadful nothingness that envelopes their gleam without a sound. Thank you.